It's time for Budweiser's From the Sidelines, presented by North Ridgeville Convenience Sunoco on Center Ridge and Barton Roads, as we welcome in Fox 8's John Telich. And JT, I think Budweiser is something that Browns fans may have been searching for quite a bit there on Monday night, as the playoff elimination had already occurred on Sunday. But again, the Browns will finish under 500. Just a disappointing campaign overall for the Browns.
It really has been. You know, Rocco, there was so much promise when they were getting ready for the season. They had acquired so many of those defensive pieces that, you know, are waiting to see how they would go. Can you even look back to that first three quarters of how they played in Kansas City? And the guy who's getting all the attention as we sit here going into the final game had a phenomenal game. Obviously, I'm speaking about Baker. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and then it once, you know, once the injury happened, once more of the Odell drama kind of drifted back to the surface, we just saw instances of where people just not being on the same page within that building. And that's unfortunate, because we've really, over the course of these 23 years since they've come back in 1999, it seems like every year there was just dysfunction and a little bit of success, but mostly the fans being disappointed, left at the altar, if you will. And this was another case. So much talent in that building, and for them to have 7 wins heading into week 18 is just very much inexcusable. Very much.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a letdown, no question about that. And a guy that you mentioned, that's where I want to go next, Baker Mayfield. Obviously, all eyes are on him now in the conversation about him in that shoulder surgery. As we know now, he won't be playing in Sunday's finale against the Bengals. Going to take care of that shoulder, one would assume, this week. I don't think we have an exact date now as we talk.
Right.
But, I mean, the Browns, JT, they got some serious evaluations to have about Baker Mayfield this offseason, and they really have to be honest with themselves. How do you evaluate his performance after this season? This is something we've talked about before, but at the honest end-of-year evaluation, how do you look at Baker Mayfield? How do you look at 6?
Well, if you look at some of the boxes to check, is he tough? Yes. Did he show he was tougher this year? Yes. Is that the only criteria that you judge a quarterback? Absolutely not. He wanted to play. He didn't think it was a big deal after he tore his labrum. And the team allowed him to trot out there. And I thought as the season went on, physically it was hampering his ability to play. But I also think there's aspects of what he was doing back in the pocket after his dropbacks, surveying the field, making decisions. I just think he regressed in that area, Rocco. And I think there are many instances where, you know, I remember Sam Darnold got a lot of flack for saying, I was seeing ghosts out there. And I'm not ready to say that Baker was seeing ghosts every week, but I just think he wasn't, maybe the best way to say it is trusting his eyes. And so, you know, while playing hurt, being disadvantaged, if you will, because of that, it hampered his ability to play the position. And I think the early disconnect here is when he was so adamant, basically telling the team, no one's going to tell me if I can't play. I'm the sole determinant of that equation. I just think that sent out a message that I thought this was a collaborative franchise. And I thought that, you know, DePodesta and Stefanski and Barry, Haslam's, everybody was, you know, holding hands together around the campfire and everything would be hunky-dory. But I think what we've ended up seeing here, Rocco, is a lot of what's gone on in Berea, we're not privy to. There can be a little leak here or a leak there, but by and large, we are Dorothy standing outside that curtain, and the Wizard of Oz is behind there, and we have no idea what's going on behind that curtain. And as much as you try to read the tea leaves of who said what to whom, who was in Baker's camp, who was in OBJ's camp, bottom line was he regressed as a quarterback. Some of it was the physical aspect, but I just think he regressed in that area. So it leads you to this point in time with the disconnect between the quarterback and the team. Is it so much so that they're not going to run him back after he gets surgery and he'll be back to 100%? By training camp, are they going to run him back out there? I think I lean more towards there's going to be some kind of a divorce.
Wow, that's certainly something there, and that's I like the Wizard of Oz connection there. Yeah, Baker might be wanting to click those heels and find his way home here soon. It's been a tough end of the season for him, but like you said, he'll try and get healthy with the shoulder surgery and all of that. And JT, as far as his last game of this season goes, that Pittsburgh game that they lost the other night, I don't think any of what I was seeing on Twitter from some fans is necessarily true, but a lot of people going after Kevin Stefanski saying, oh, he's sabotaging Baker Mayfield. He's rolling him out to his bad shoulder. Yeah. He's doing this. He's doing that. And I don't buy that. But, I mean, honestly, JT, was there a better way to use Baker Mayfield, not only in that Pittsburgh game, but, towards the end of this season as those injuries really started to pile up?
Well, I know as the game was going on, a lot of us were advocating, roll him out, get him outside the pocket, use more play action, all of those types of things. At the time, we didn't know the extent of the situation with Nick Chubb. They said he got dinged up in the ribs, and maybe that affected how much he was out there on the field. We heard, Peyton Manning basically saying, if Nick Chubb is not standing next to Baker Mayfield in the backfield, bad things are going to happen. In many ways, Peyton Manning was absolutely 100% correct. But, as that game went on, and I want to credit, I don't know if any of you folks take in some of the content that Jake Burns, he's young guy that, he deciphers the X's and O's. He's kind of one of those guys that came about because of the late, great John Madden, because all the kids are growing up playing football, a game video and playing football. And now, they want to really decipher what's going on with the intricacies between the offensive line, the running backs, the quarterbacks, what stunts are the defense pulling and all that sort of stuff. He concluded, because he just dropped his podcast a day or so before. Number one, Baker was not trusting what he was seeing. Number two, even though he went back on some deep drops, he didn't climb the pocket, if I can get kind of technical here, which means if he doesn't move a little bit closer to the line of scrimmage and his line affords him an opportunity to throw, bad things are going to happen. And he gets sacked by T.J. Watt. He also said that, there was in many instances where tight ends or running backs were chipping in the area that T.J. Watt was coming from. It was just a bad night. First of all, Baker still not being able to move as well as he could, but there were plays where there were people open, and he just wasn't trusting his eyes. So some of those sacks, those nine sacks, you could put those on Baker. The offensive line had a real bad day, real bad night in Pittsburgh. Not what you would like, including Betonio and some of their better players along the line. I think there was only one offensive guy that was graded above 70 on on that side of the football. So everything kind of moved in concert in a bad way to contribute to him playing a really subpar game and throwing the couple of picks that he threw and getting sacked nine times. It was just a bad recipe for disaster. All the ingredients for a disaster were there. And maybe you could say that was a microcosm of what's been going on this year. There's been some games where the defense was just phenomenal and the offense helped him absolutely zero. I mean, when's the last time the offense really clicked? It was that Cincinnati game. Yeah. And that's been way, way too long ago, Rocco. Way too long ago.
Yeah, no, you're not wrong there. As John Telich is our guest here on Budweiser's From the Sidelines, presented by North Ridgeville Convenient Sunoco on Center Ridge and Barton Roads. All right, so JT, now that attention is not totally on the off season, as again you do have that finale against the Bengals on Sunday. But when the off season comes around with free agency and the draft and all of that, where are upgrades needed the most on this Cleveland Browns team?
Well, they got to make decisions on, J.C. Treader has been there for a while, but, do you try to kind of get to the next generation of centers? You have to, be mindful of your salary cap. You paid Betonio, you paid Wyatt Teller. What do you do about Austin Hooper? He's been disappointing. I think we saw those drops, and also some of his blocking was left a little to be desired. What do you do about Jadeveon Clowney? Now, has played well, and what's up to 7 sacks on the season. So I think it's worth exploring to see whether or not there is a fit for next year. They still need to upgrade in linebacker position, but we found out that they had a gamer in JOK. Love him. On the defensive secondary, you had Greedy and Denzel on the outside, and you had some guys backing him up, like people that were one-time practice squad guys, but they got their playing time this year because of COVID and what have you. So there's something there. On you have John Johnson, who was hurt at the end of the year. Certainly, you've got Grant Delpit. I think we all had our hearts in our throats when Delpit limped off the field and thought, "Oh, here we go again." But he was able to get back on the field. So, the defensive side of the ball, not in that bad a shape, if you will. But the big area that I think they have to really upgrade is that wide receiver room. And now they're going to have a high pick, a fairly decent, draft pick. And we already know there's great talent coming out of not just Ohio State at that position, but elsewhere in the country. I think it's going to be a pretty decent first, second round availability of wide receivers. And I think that would be an area where they would have to concentrate their energies on. And then what do you do about Jarvis Landry? Is it the end of the road for Jarvis in Cleveland? Jarvis, was he really impacted by the departure of his good buddy OBJ? I'd like to say he wasn't, but we really never heard from him except for the one time he showed up to when he was giving out turkeys.
Right.
And he had a short interview with the reporters that were there. But other than that, he was never front and center in Berea talking to the media, either in person or Zoom. So what do they do, with is it worth trotting him back out for another year? So they've got lots of questions, and, they're set at running back. I think they have to make a decision on DeErnest, and I like what he brings to the table. But your window's closing. You had about half of the season where you didn't have the services of one guy who I think really impacted their offense by not being able to play, and that was Kareem Hunt. And they're certainly going to have Kareem. They'll have Nick next year because Nick got the nice extension. They're good there, but there's a lot of areas that they have to pay attention to, but no area more important than who is taking the ball from center. None more.
Andrew Berry, come on down. You got some decisions to make, my man. So we'll see how he handles this offseason and what, like you said, JT, should be a pretty crazy one. So stepping away from the on-field discussions here to wrap things up, I want to talk retirement with you here, JT, as we're about a month away from your final send-off. And I say this only because I saw your tweet on Monday night after the game talking about kind of, watching the ceremonies there for Ben Roethlisberger, the way Heinz Field sort of embraced him. And you said that kind of got you thinking about, the near future and everything. And then what, a day later, 2 days later, whatever, Doug Deacon announces that this will be his final season. So just curious your two thoughts quickly on Big Ben, because I'm sure our listeners don't really care too much about him. But as far as your relationship with Doug and, your background with him, just wanted to give you an opportunity to expand on that if you wanted.
Yeah, thanks. Well, first of all, Big Ben, I think it's so ironic that he was in tears during that playoff game a year ago as the Browns were beating the pants off of the Steelers. And then on Monday night, he was in tears again, but it was on that contented feeling, feeling the love of Steeler fans in Pittsburgh. And again, I know Browns fans don't care one whit about it, but I just thought it was kind of ironic that, we all thought he was done then. And even though he came back and played this year and wasn't spectacular by any stretch of the imagination, he still had a few bullets in the gun there. He showed, that he can still make some plays. He did in the first outing against the Browns when he threw that touchdown pass to his tight end, which was the decisive play in the game. So it was ironic that, you had tears in January of 2021, and then you had tears on a Monday night very early in January of 22. Now, as for Deacon, I mean, I love this guy. I've known him for, it's going on 42 years now. I was introduced to Doug by Jim Mueller, who was the main sports guy when I began at Fox 8 or at Channel 8 back in 1980. And Jim sent me around and introduced me to everybody pretty much that was on the sports landscape at the time, like Sam Ratigliano, Clay Matthews, Ozzie, all those guys. And the guy that made the biggest impression on me was this knucklehead tackle, Doug Deacon, who was in the latter stages of his career and had been to a Pro Bowl, was just a character, you know, in that newsroom, in that locker room, and was a practical joker. I think Danny Coughlin from the Cleveland Plain Dealer, and who's been at Channel 8 for many years, Danny and Deacon used to have this running thing where they did pranks upon each other. Like Danny came home from a vacation, there were three goats in his garage, courtesy of Doug Deacon. And then when Deacon came home from a vacation to his house, he went into his bedroom and looked up, and there was all mirrors on the ceiling of his bedroom. And so that was the kind of guy that Deacon was. And to this day, you know, I've seen that kind of impish quality to this man. He loves his Browns. He's one of the great iron men of the National Football League to play all those consecutive games at tackle. Now, we heard enough about how Joe Thomas had his 10,633 streak, which he was only just trying to keep up with what Doug Deacon did, because Deacon played all those consecutive games, and he was running out there with bad knees or had surgery, should not have been playing. And so I always respected Deke, not just for that, but for the expertise that he would provide to us. Now, he, you know, he's part of our Orange and Brown countdown show, which we're going to tape this afternoon, this being Thursday when this runs. You know, we'll be saying so long to Doug as far as that's concerned. I just really love the guy, and the biggest impression he gave to me early on was on Tuesdays of every week during the NFL season. That's the day that the guys get out, the ones that are in the, it's in their heart to do so, get out into the community and do things. And every Tuesday, when I started there in 1980, up till when Deacon was retiring after the 84 season, I would go out and do those stories, and invariably, almost every week, Deke would be out doing something, whether it was at a hospital or having a dinner that would raise money for Special Olympics, which was near and dear to his heart. His brother had Down syndrome, and in those days, it was just so free flowing. You know, the access we had to the players, the access I had to Deke. It only, you know, grew even stronger once he retired and he was up in the radio booth with, you know, at first he was up there with, you know, with Nev. He was up there with Casey Coleman. He was up there with, obviously, Jimmy all these years. And just, you know, one of the true iconic figures in Cleveland sports here in Northeast Ohio. And I think you guys probably understand that if he's going to put out jokes, most of the time they're upon himself, and he never took himself too seriously. I mean, he was supposed to be a tight end when he came to the NFL, but right, the Browns made him a tackle, and he made a great career of it both on the field and in the broadcast booth, and was even an Iron Man in the broadcast booth. I think he only missed two games. I can recall in a preseason setting a few years back, he had a bad case of laryngitis. It's a preseason game. Take it off. He did everything in his power to be able to be in the booth and be there. So I have just a ton of respect for Deke. I wish him nothing but, you know, straight drives and strong putting on the golf course and just a lot of happiness, because he has been a big part of my experience as a sportscaster here in Northeast Ohio. There's a lot of people that I've run across, but few of them have had the impact and be such a good dude the way Doug Deacon has been.
Well, and for me, JT, being, you know, I was born in 96, so I've only really known him in the radio booth. And when you think about Cleveland Browns, you know, football on the radio, everybody go, oh, Jim Donovan. But, you know, for a lot of us, for most of all of us, I would say, Doug Deacon is always right there. You got to mention him as well. That's the kind of impact he's had in the booth. And, of course, his impact on this world goes way, way beyond just the broadcast booth or anything like that. So great stuff.
He was a blast. He was just a blast to be around. And one quick little anecdote, I remember him back in like 82 or so introducing me to this young linebacker on the team. It was at one of those events. They had just signed, brought the kid in, and he was with the Browns a very short period of time, and said, I'd like to introduce you to Bill Cowher. That was back when Bill Cowher came to play for the Cleveland Browns. And Cowher and Deacon, you know, they ran in the same circles, if you will. Just outstanding guy Doug Deacon has been. I wish him nothing but the best moving forward.
Was Bill Cowher's jaw as intimidating back then as it is now?
Yeah, I think we, you know, as much as people joked about John Shula with that jaw of granite, same could be said for Bill Cowers. And, you know, he still has a house in Strongsville, right, as the legend goes. Ha, ha, ha. Not true, but still the legend.
He'll move in one day soon. I mean, it's still in development. That's all it is. It's still in development.
Exactly.
So. Well, JT, it's been a blast here again on Budweiser's From the Sidelines, presented by North Ridgeville Convenience Sunoco on Center Ridge and Barton Roads. JT, have a great rest of the week. And gosh, we'll do this one final time. And next week, I'm looking forward to it.
I am too. And the Browns need to, you know, finish up here. A lot of changes with the Bengals, with some guys in the COVID list. So, you know, they have an opportunity, if they go out and play well, that they can at least finish up the season on a strong note and move on from there.
There you go. Finish strong and move it on. JT, it's been an honor. Take care. Talk to you next week.
Sounds good, buddy. Talk to you then. Thanks, Rocco.